harmonica from this group.
From this group. Hello. That's right, my team. Hello, Zoom people. My name is Veronica, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 12, 2004. I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink or a drug since coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group. I started coming back here. I moved to Telford in 2017, and I came back to Feet First, and I got a sponsor from this meeting because I was kind of slacking a lot in my recovery. I needed to pull it back together, so I got a sponsor from here. I got a big book sponsor. And we've gone through the steps every year since then. And in 3 weeks, I'm going to my brother's wedding reception. They got married last year in COVID, and so they're having a wedding reception party in 3 weeks, and I'm going to go. It's an hour drive, which sucks, but my aunt's coming up, and I'm showing up for my family today, and you know, being there for my brother. We also had a memorial for my mom last October, and my mom died a year before that, and I really didn't want to go to the memorial because it was sad, and I didn't want to be sad again. I didn't want to grieve again in front of people, and everyone's like, oh, you poor baby, and I didn't want to be sad, but I showed up anyway. I showed up for my brother and my aunt and my cousin and whoever else, and to show up for my family, and even though I didn't want to, and it was fine. It wasn't that sad, but I could show up for my family today. Anyway, I grew up in Ambler. I have a younger brother. My parents were married until I was 8. And my dad was a lot of fun. We did a lot of fun stuff. There was a park across the street from my house, and he knows a lot of kids. I grew up with neighborhood kids, and I had a best friend who lived down the street. And it was fun. I learned how to ride bikes. My dad taught me how to play baseball. I played sports all the time. And, you know, I did good in school. They taught me to learn a lot about, like, math and stuff and try to be a smart kid. And I got A's a lot. And I learned that if I got A's in class, that I would get a lot of praise and attention from my mom. And they would give me love. So I did a good job in school, so I would do that to get love from my mom. And, kind of like kiss ass, I guess. And but my dad was funny. He had a lot of jokes and stuff. He was like a lot. He was fun with the kids, and he had a lot of jokes. And he's funny. And I don't really like talking about the beginning. That's why I don't like speaking for an hour, because like I talk about the beginning of my story to fill the whole hour. But my parents got divorced when I was 8, and I kind of repressed a lot of those emotions because it was hard for me to deal with. And so I had to deal with it later. I kind of like shoved it all down at age 8 and just kind of held on to all this negative emotional, you know, energy, and just kind of impacted it and just kept playing sports and kept going to school and kept, you know, hanging out with my friends and whatever. And in about 8th grade, my friends were smoking cigarettes, and I picked up cigarettes, and I have an addictive personality. My body's very addictive, and I became very addicted to cigarettes at age 13. And then we were trying to be, they had changed, like I say, 13, it's like that age where it switches over into alcoholism or whatever, or the human development at age 13 and 14, your brain changes. And a lot of alcoholics go to alcohol and drugs because, just because of the change in their brain. So I picked up cigarettes, and we were hanging out with the kids on the corner or whatever. And I was thinking about, like, what happened to some of these kids. I know the one guy went to jail. I think one of them died. The other one had, like, gun charges and stuff like that. And so I was, like, a good kid. But I was hanging out with, like, you know, tough kids because they're my friends. My friend was doing, and we started dating, whatever. And then age 14 went into high school. And I was afraid of being made fun of because I was very smart, and I didn't want to, you know, be made fun of. And I had my little group of girlfriends that I was friends with, and I wanted to be a cool person, so I changed my clothes. I started failing on purpose, and I was hanging out with these cool kids, and you know, picked up drugs and alcohol at age 14. And I was underage, so it was harder to get alcohol, so we'd get drugs. And the kid, you know, the dealer kid was into my school, so we'd just go down the hall and buy it off of him. And I was able to convince my mom to give me lunch money. And I never bought lunch. I would just use it for other things, including cigarettes. I was underage with cigarettes, too. We'd walk home, and there's this one deli that would sell me. I'd buy a carton at a time because they were harder to get. So I'd go buy a carton of Marlboros. And I had, like, one time I was afraid they were going to steal. I had my school bag. I was afraid they were going to steal because I would leave it out front and go in and buy cigarettes and come out and put them in there. I was afraid they were going to steal, so I had my school bag on, and I walked into the deli. And they're like, oh, they're for your mom, right? I'm like, yeah, cigarettes are for my mom. And they weren't for my mom. But I started using drugs, and the kids that I was using with, it was, you know, social maybe three times with them in a group. And after that, I bought my own stuff. I was doing it before school, during school, after school, at night, every day. Because I had so much anxiety from high school, I have a lot of anxiety problems. Plus, I said all the repressed emotional stuff from my dad and you know, my parents, and I quit all my sports, and I, you know, quit my music. I quit everything. I just started drinking and using, and it was every day. I would do it before school. I said, how can you go to high school if you're sober? It's terrible. I couldn't manage it. I really couldn't manage it. So I had to be under the influence. But so I did that for about a year. And that summer, I was hanging out with my best friend, and we were just all the time, we're messed up all the time, and only hanging out with people that did the same behavior, driving to the city or something, and stuff like that. And hanging out with those kids, and then later, like, you go back to Facebook, oh, I wonder what happened to those kids, and, you know, they just disappear or whatever. So in 10th grade, I tried to pull it back together. I was messed up before going to bed one night, and I could see the progression of my disease. I could just see it. It gets into harder and harder drugs. You're not going to graduate high school because I was failing. You're going to be homeless on the street. And I really honestly didn't believe I'd live past age 25. Like, I really honestly didn't believe that I would. And I tried to stop. It scared me enough that I wanted to try to stop. So I stopped hanging out with those kids, and I stopped everything. And my body, with nothing in my system, just got more depressed, more depressed, more depressed, more depressed. And I started dating this kid, and I'm very codependent, very enmeshed with this kid and his friends and whatever. And my body was having depression, and I couldn't handle it. I couldn't sleep at night. I had so many problems, I couldn't sleep. And I'd sleep on this side, be like something like you're failing school. Sleep on this side, oh, you need your driver's license. Sleep on this side, you need to get a job. And it's like I couldn't handle it, and I couldn't sleep. And so like winter of that year, I was thinking of suicide, like actual ways, like how to do it, because I was in so much emotional pain, I couldn't see a way out of it. I had this bully kid in high school screaming at me, and I was failing. I had to break up with my boyfriend. I had all these problems that I couldn't see a way out of it, and I had all this repressed stuff from my dad and whatever, and at that point, it's like, I hate my father. I hate him. It's his fault. He shouldn't, don't have kids if you're not going to whatever, and I had so much hate towards him, but it was just a way to point my anger out at him. And he wasn't in my life at that point, but, you know, I don't know how you kill a person. So I didn't know how to do it. And, you know, my family doesn't have guns or anything. And, so I didn't know. So, I had like a month or 6 weeks of not sleeping at night. I'd sleep like 2 hours, and then get up and go to high school, and it was so stressful. And I'd come home, and I was like, I couldn't sleep. And then one night, in the middle of the night, I had this voice of, go downstairs and tell your mom. And I did. And in the middle of the night, and I'm like, you know, I was using drugs, blah, blah, blah. I'm thinking of ways to kill myself. And I was really upset. I was really at the bottom. And So we decided to talk to. They tried to put me in therapy when I was 8 when they got divorced, and I didn't really work. But I said, let's call that therapist lady. So I went to see. I was 16 years old. I went to see the therapist, and I was clinically depressed. And she took one look at me. She said, you need to go into inpatient treatment. And I was so beaten. I literally was at death level. And I just said, do whatever she said. So I went to the treatment. It was a nice, you know, nice place. And, you know, I was a suburban kid. And, you know, I was honest. They said, do you use drugs? Yes. Which drugs? I was very honest with them. And they said, you need psych drugs. You need to talk to a psychiatrist. You need a therapist. You need to go to NA meetings. And I was beaten. I was listening to what they said. I said, go to NA when you get out of here. So they started feeding me psych drugs. And, so I did. I got out of there. I went to Narcotics Anonymous. I went to one meeting a week, the one closest to my house. I was 16 years old. There's a lot of teenagers there. And I didn't really understand what NA was. I thought it was like group therapy. So I'd put my hand up and share some garbage about my feelings. Didn't get a sponsor. I didn't work any steps. I'd go to one meeting a week. And then I would go home. And then I got my 1 year. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to do that anymore. So I stopped going, and I tried to pull it back together. The psych drugs that they gave me all these antidepressants, so it shot me over into mania. And I went back and they had, oh, you had to go back in the hospital. I said, oh, you have manic depression, not just clinical depression. So then they had to, it was like 6 times of being in treatment to get the pills right, which is horrible. It was a very hard, probably worst time of my life. Because they kept feeding you all these drugs, and then you're out of your mind. My body was blowing up. It gave me, like, lithium. My body was, like, expanding. And it was out of my mind. It was crazy. And it was really scary. And I would have, like, terror and stuff. And they say, oh, and I would get panic attacks. They'd say, oh, we're going to add more drugs to feed the panic attacks. And then you just keep adding and adding drugs. So I was on, like, 5 or 6 different drugs, and just keep adding more. I had never gotten panic attacks before they started putting me on psych drugs. But they're like not counteracting with each other. So I was on like all these drugs, my body was just blowing up. And I was in high school. And it was horrible. It was really horrible. And then there'd be other kids in there, like little drug addict kids, and you know, I don't know. There's this one counselor there, and they always take your, you know, blood pressure, and he was always singing. He would sit there and like sing, and I was like, oh my God. And I kept getting in and out of the same treatment, and I would get readmitted, and they're like, oh, here comes trouble again. And I have to be in the same place. So the counselors are sick of me. That was funny. And I remember it was one time, it was like my senior year, my senior prom weekend or whatever, and I was in the psych hospital, and I was like, oh, today, this week's my senior prom. Or whatever, I wasn't gonna go, but it's still, it's funny, like that's what was going on with other kids' lives, and I'm like in treatment. And I pulled it together, and I started taking community college classes, and I started working on losing weight. I lost all the weight, and I started in 19 years old, I was taking community college, and I got another boyfriend, and focusing on him, and he drank alcohol. Like a regular, well, now he's more not a regular drinker, but. So I thought, well, try the drugs, push the drugs over here. And I haven't really drank because I was underage. I was like, I'll just push the alcohol over here. But I just keep the drugs here and the alcohol here. I'll just focus on drinking. And I've never really drank. I'm not, probably not that bad. I know about the drug addict part, but so I thought I'll just try to drink. And, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I didn't know it. I didn't know that, you know, that's the same thing. Drugs, to me, in my opinion, drugs and alcohol is the same illness. You're treating the spiritual problem. You can treat it with food or men or drugs or alcohol or food or whatever other thing. But it's the same. It's an internal spiritual condition. So I was trying to, so I started 19, I started drinking alcohol with him. And he would buy 2 cases of beer. And he was like staying at my mom's house with me. We'd buy 2 cases of beer, put it in the garage. And then we drank, like, all of it all week. And all of it. And then, you know, I can't manage it. I was drinking on top of psych drugs, 5 psych drugs, and pouring, like, beer and vodka, whatever, on top of the psych drugs. And it creates anger in my body. I'm, like, screaming. I couldn't get the anger out. And I would just, the way that the anger would come out is if I screamed. So if I screamed at my mom, screamed at my boyfriend, screamed at people I didn't know, and then we ended up, I was always fighting with him. We dated for 2 years, and it was like, and I was trying to think later, like, what were we all fighting about? And it's like, I can't even remember. It's stupid stuff. And he never let me win the fight. If he had let me win the fight, we'd be married and divorced by now. But, you know, I'd be a single mom, which is great. But I'm not, thank God. But anyway, so I thought he was my problem, and I broke up with him. So I started drinking. I would hang out with my old friend. We'd go out to drink. She'd go out to the bars and drink. So I changed my drinking. And I was still taking a psych drug. So I would drink in the bars and then, you know, hook up with people, whatever. And then I would end up screaming at people. I'd get into fights, screaming fights at people. And I just couldn't handle, it's just, my body can't handle alcohol. I'm a mean drunk, I'm part Irish, you know, and I'm part Irish alcoholic, and my grandfather was an alcoholic, my aunt's in recovery. It's just part of my family, and my body can't handle it. So I'm just screaming at people, starting fights with people, and I was hanging out with this one kid who wasn't my boyfriend, and he was talking to these other girls. So I started, like yelling at him, and we weren't together. But I was having, like, I couldn't handle things. And I was like, oh, he's talking to all these other girls, so I'm just like, it's not fair, because I wanted to date him, so I started screaming at him, whatever. And this other girl, whatever, bartender, had this really cute boyfriend, that started hitting on the boyfriend right in front of her, so I just didn't care. Like, I did care, but I couldn't control I didn't have, like, normal, whatever. Like, leave that kid alone, he has a girlfriend. Like, it just didn't, like, I thought he was cute, so I'm gonna talk to him. And stuff like that. And we drive drunk all the time. I can drive drunk. I would come home at like 2 o'clock, and I would wear contacts. And in the middle of the night, and my eyes would get all disgusting with the contacts. And then I'm like falling asleep at 2 o'clock. So I put the air conditioner on to keep awake, and then like turn the radio on really loud so I stay awake. And then I'm driving like the speed limit. It'd be like 25 miles an hour. So I drive 25 miles an hour, not get a ticket. And, like, that's how I would drive home, like, this all the time. But I didn't get any DUIs, thank God. And I managed to graduate college, and then I didn't work. So I had two internships that I managed to do, and then I just laid on my mom's couch. I got off out of school, and I just lay on the couch because I was suffering from alcoholism to a level of I can't work, I can't show up, I can't do basic things. I don't even know how I managed to graduate college. I was having, I looked like a mentally ill person in my class. I couldn't handle things, but I managed to get good grades. And I graduated and I laid on my mom's couch, and then the counselor lady was supposed to help me get a job. And I was saying, well, it's her fault. She's not helping me, whatever. But, and then I did get a job in my field, and I would go to my job late as this woman's own business. And I would show up late. She's like, well, you can come in at 10 o'clock and whatever, because they make their own hours. So I'd come in. So then I would just slack off in the morning and get there late and whatever. And then I'd go out and drink. Like on a Wednesday night, I would go to the bar, and then I'd point to all these other working people that were worse than me and, you know, pointing at them, calling them alcoholics. But guess what? You're in a bar on a Wednesday night at 6 o'clock with them. So, you know, whatever. And then I freaked out. I remember having that job. I freaked out in the lady's job, and just hitting a bottom with alcohol. And I was like crying, I can't do this. And I went back to make amends to that woman, but she moved, so I don't know where she is now. But I freaked out, and I quit my job, and I was a terrible employee. And I went home, and so January of that year, 2004, I wasn't working, and I would sleep during the middle of the day because I don't work, and I was drinking a lot. And my mind, I had manic depression. My mind was being manic, and I could tell the thoughts. I was having crazy thoughts. I could, like, see the thoughts. And it was like, oh, I need to get treatment again. I need help again. And I was 24, and it was such a defeat onto myself because I had already spent 6 inpatients. And I was like, I'm going to pull it together on myself. And here was the bottom. I couldn't pull it together myself. and I needed to get help again. It was such a defeat unto myself. My first bottom was suicidal depression. The second one is defeat unto myself of alcoholism. And I knew that if I didn't do anything about it, it would be go back to suicidal depression again. So I had to ask my mom. I said, I need to go into treatment. I went into Horsham for 3 weeks there, treating for manic depression. They changed my pills. I was paranoid. I was having paranoid thoughts. I thought that I was being recorded, audio and video recording, and I wasn't, and I really did believe it. And it was like terror. I was having terror because I was afraid to talk because I thought that I was being recorded. And you know, the counselors, they make fun of you. Like, I was trying to get ready to go to the lunch cafeteria or whatever, and it was cold. It was January. I had my coat on. I just got out of the shower, so I had my towel wrapped around my head, and and they were leaving. I had my coat on. I ran out. I was like, wait for me. They were, like, laughing, making fun of me. I was just unmanageable, like a can't manage thing. I was getting sober. I didn't know that's what I was doing. I think the Lord kind of puts it in there, like, you're getting sober now, like, without, you know, mentally, like, choosing it. I had three weeks in there, and then I got out, and then I was hanging out with some kid that I barely knew, and he had to get a paper signed in AA, and I said, I'll be supportive of you. I don't know you, but I'm going to support your treatment. And so I went to the meeting with him, AA and Ambler. There was like six people, and me and this guy, and you know, he's just there to get a paper signed. He could care less. And then they went around, they all shared, and they pointed to me and said, oh, no, I'm just here for him, I'm supporting him, blah, blah. And so I didn't share. And then we held hands and said, Our Father, and I could feel God's presence in my body. Started, like, crying because I had spent all this time in NA. I spent all this time just got out of treatment. And I was crying. And these women, they gave me a big book. There's a phone list. Keep coming back. There's a meeting here tomorrow night, da-da-da. And I went home, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And so I called one of the ladies that gave me their number, and I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, look in the meeting list, find a meeting near you, put your hand up and say that you're new. And near me was the Lansdale Clubhouse. So I went in there. It was my second meeting. I wore skirts and boots, and these people were staring at me, and I was like, don't look at me. And I was like, crying, sobbing, my life is over. And I followed the direction. I said, I'm new, I don't know what I'm doing. All these women, like, attacked me afterwards and gave me phone numbers and keep coming back and there's a meeting here tomorrow, kid, blah, blah. And I was 24 years old. I felt very sorry for myself. I thought I was losing a lot of things. I thought I was losing my friends, and I was losing a lot of things. And it was very self-pity, very sad, very whatever. And I kept coming back. I went to Lansdale for a while, and then I was sharing with this woman that I was getting creeped out by some of the men, and they were like, well, go to a church basement meeting and get out of the clubhouse. And I did, and I listened to her, and then I would go to Ambler for a while. And, you know, I don't know. I couldn't – I was – there's – okay, so I had this one sponsor – my second sponsor dropped me because I was too sick for her. And she said that I could have her sponsor, the other lady. So I go, okay. So her name was Elizabeth. And I would go to the meeting, see Elizabeth, and I had, like, cat hair on my shirt because I couldn't get my laundry together. I would, like, hold my cat, and there was a cat hair. And so we were at the meeting, and she's like, oh, you see you have a cat, right? And I was so pissed at her. How dare you point out that I have cat hair on my shirt? You know, and I can't manage laundry right now. And then this other woman, like, how much time you got now? I was like, oh, I don't know. What month is it? And she's like, February. Like, I don't know. I think I got like 40 days. She's like, oh, did you get a 30-day coin? I was like, no, it's 40 days. And she's like, well, you can get a 30-day coin. I was like, no. And this other woman that was relapsing heard that I had like 40 days and it turned into this competition thing because she couldn't get it together, rich lady. And she was like jealous of me or something. But I was so out of my mind, literally didn't know what month it was. And then we were in the Ambler meeting and it was February, it was like February 14th, Valentine's Day. These women wear red shirts on Valentine's Day to celebrate the holiday. And I'm like, how in the world can you get it together to wear a red shirt on Valentine's Day? I don't know. I'm just like foreign language or something. But so I burned through a lot of sponsors. Elizabeth helped me a lot. I had 4 years, well, jumping ahead, but when I had 4 years sober, she had 10 years sober, and she's like, yeah, I'm not going to go to AA anymore. I'm like, no, you have to, you can't, stop, you're going to forget, you're going to drink. She's like, yeah, I just don't want to go. She's like, I don't want to go to a bar, I don't want to go to AA, I don't want to do any of that. I'm like, no. And I don't know what happened to her, but she really did help me a lot. So I was going to my noon meetings because I wasn't working. I would go to my noon, and I was very sad for myself. Again, young person recovery. Started overeating again, gained more weight back. And whatever. So I was at my noon meeting in Lansdale, and this woman came in. She was happy and sober at the same time. There was just brightness in her eyes, and she was happy. She knew all the people. She was shaking all the hands. And the only reason I asked her to sponsor me is because my sponsor was moving. She forced me to get another sponsor. So I asked this lady if I could have her number. Or whatever, and I asked her to sponsor me. She said, have you ever gone through the steps? And I said, yeah, I did a 4-step, blah, blah, blah. I had, like, every person I ever met name on there. And she's like, well, I'm going to take you through the steps through the big book. And she's like, I'm going to make my home group is going to be your home group. It's the Feet First Speakers group. It meets Monday nights at 8 o'clock in Sellersville. You're going to be there an hour early, and we're going to go through the steps. It was a half-hour drive for me, and I was like, eh, you know, I don't know. There's meetings down the street. I could drive 5 minutes to go to a meeting. She's like, you're going to be there an hour early, and we're going through the steps, or you can go find another sponsor. I was like, God. I was like, fine. So I showed up early, making me get better. I showed up early. There's a lot of young people at the time, and I thought I was such a unique, whatever, terminally unique. No one else is as bad as me, and there's all these other young kids there. I was like, I had a lot of social anxiety. I had a hard time relating to people on an even level because I felt so much worse than everybody. I felt worse than every other person in the room. And just because I had so much unresolved stuff that I didn't, I still had all that stuff I never dealt with yet. And just carrying it around every day. And went through steps with her. And we did the 3rd step prayer, we did 4 and 5, and my 4 and 5 had like 8 names on it. I had childhood and high school and college. And like I said, I had paranoid thoughts. I had really deep, hurtful things on that list. And when I shared them with her, I really felt like emotional weight was like lifted off of me. Like I felt healthy, and I was like, oh my God, like I feel so much better. And she really helped me a lot. And then I think it was a lot for her because I was used to the other sponsors that would, like, they were, like, old enough to be my mom, so they'd act like my mom, or they'd act like a pretend therapist to me, or they didn't really do any step work, but they would just try to, like, boss me around or stuff like that. So I was used to people like that sponsoring me. So then with Sherry, I'd be, like, pulling the same stuff and, like, try to get her to, like, pity me and stuff. And she wasn't having it, and she wasn't calling me back, and I would call her phone. I had to, she made me get a job too. And I know. So I wasn't working during the day. I'd go to my noon meeting, and then I call her at like 2 o'clock and bitch about the girl in the meeting who's not my friend. And she's like, you need to get a job. And I'm like, ugh. So got a job, and you know, I hated it, whatever, but she was helping me grow up really in recovery because my mom was just very enabling and whatever, but this woman was like, and I think I learned better from negative reinforcement, because if they just pat me on the head and said, everything's fine, you're doing great, kid, I would lay on the couch and not show up. But the fact that this woman was, you know, negative reinforcement, it really forced me to push me forward, and I really needed that kick in the butt, whatever. And I did listen to her. That's the other thing. I followed the direction. I try to sponsor other women, tell them to do stuff, they just don't do it. And I was like, well, you know, you have to do it. So I would call her and complain about whatever, bitch into her voicemail, and then she wouldn't call me back. And then I was like, you're supposed to be helping me. You have to call me back. And then she wouldn't call me back. And then I would cry into her voicemail. I need help. I'm gonna die. I'm dying. I'm gonna drink. And she wouldn't call me back for like 3 days. I was so pissed at her. How dare you not help me? I'm dying. And she wouldn't do it. She wouldn't hear it. And so then to force what happened by her not being my higher power, forced me to get a higher power. So I had to pray. I had to call someone else and even bitch about her. Like, I knew, believe she did not call me back. I'm dying. And it forced me to work my program. By her not enabling me and not being my higher power, forced me to pray and all these other things, go to a meeting, whatever, whatever. And she really helped me a lot. And I think the last time I saw her, I was at my meeting and she came in, she got her 26-year coin. And she just doesn't come around. Her life is full. She has a relationship, she has a son, she has a full-time job, she has dogs, she has friends. Her life is full because from AA. So she just doesn't go to AA. And for people like that, you have to be here for you to remember and also to help the next person. And they just stop coming around, but she really did help me a lot anyway. So we got through 12, and she was so sick of me by 10, 11, 12. I barely learned 10, 11, 12 because she was so sick of me at that point. But so I didn't really do 10 for a while, but she's like, oh, you're sponsoring now. I'm like, no, I don't know. I was like, no, I'm not good at it. I'm not spiritual. I'm not whatever. She said, you are sponsoring now. She says, you have the book. You have your own experience. That's all you need. She said, if you're meeting with someone, you can call me before you meet them, and you can ask them questions or whatever, and whatever. So I got this woman that was a chronic relapser as my first sponsee, and just because she was available. And I tried to sit down and read the book with her. And so we got down, we got to 9, and then she drank again. And I was like, oh my God. Because I thought that I had something to do with making her be sober, and I don't. It's between them and their higher power. I can't do it for them. I can't, whatever. I can share what I did, and I have the book, but it's up to them. They have to do it, physically do the action. If they don't do it, they will drink. So this lady drinks, and I'm like, oh my God, and I'm calling her, and she's like, good, get another sponsee. I'm like, oh my God. That was a very difficult sponsee in the beginning, I feel like. Anyway, let me think. I started going to church when I had 6 years sober. Well, I tried it 2 years too, but at 6 years sober, I went to this born again church. And they had the CR group, Celebrate Recovery. And I would go there, and I was sober in AA. I had 8 years too. I think I was sitting in the group, 8 years sober, the women's group. All of them were relapsing. There was one woman with 16 years. I had 8 years. Every other woman was relapsing off like opiates every week. And I was like, I can't help them. I was like, I can't. And I was sitting in the group, and like, why am I doing this? So I ended up stopped going to that group. But it got me to sit in church. So I would sit in church, I started dating this guy from the church who had 2 kids, and their mother was an addict, not in their kids' lives. And I thought, well, you know, I'll be supportive again. So I ended up moving in with him, and then I ended up taking care of these 2 kids. They were not my kids, because nobody was watching them. They were 8 and 10 years old. They're just kind of, no one was watching them. So I thought, I will watch them for free and for fun, whatever. It wasn't fun. But it was like being a nanny. It was like being a nanny that wasn't paid, and it was horrible. But again, just because someone sits in church, it doesn't mean they don't have bad behavior. So he had a woman problem. I thought, well, if I was prettier, if I was thinner, if I was whatever, then he wouldn't be texting these other women. And what I had to learn was that that's his behavior. Some people are just like that. They just have that behavior, and I don't have that, but whatever. But it was really bad, and I was living with him, and we stayed together for 4 years, and like I said, I was watching his kids and making them dinner and doing the laundry and watching the dog and da-da-da, driving to school and all this stuff. And And he's just like, you know, doing whatever he wants, and I couldn't make him stop. And what I learned a lot is, like, I have a lot of Al-Anon behaviors too. So I was having all these Al-Anon behaviors, codependency, and I thought I could make him change his behavior, and I can't. So I stopped. I moved out and, you know, whatever, I moved out. And I moved back to my mom's house in Ambler, and I was sad. I had repressed all this stuff, like, and I was trying to be a Christian and trying to be perfect. And you see these Christian women, and they put up with so much crap from their husbands and, you know, from my CR group. They would put up with so much crap. And I thought, oh, you have to put up with so much crap to be like that. And when I broke up with them, I went home, and I was really depressed. Like, oh, my God. Like, I just laid around in bed a lot. And I buy candy and eat candy because I wasn't using or drinking and I was sober. I was still going to meetings, AA meetings, and I would just buy candy and eat candy, and that was my outlet. And, cause you know, it's not that bad of a habit. So that would be my outlet. And I just watch TV, I watch YouTube and television and lay in my mom's house, and it was hard to deal with. And I started going to 309 Unity Clubhouse at that time. It was near, you know, Montgomeryville area. So I started going there. And I was kind of suffering. I think I had 12 years sober. And I would share about my breakup. And people got sick of it. And they thought, oh, at 12 years, you're not supposed to have problems. And they would judge my recovery, stuff like that. And I would get sponsors from 309. And they think they're doing it the right way. But they're not really doing it. It's sort of right. It's not 100% right. And I had already had this experience with Sherry at Feet First of how doing it the right way, going through the book. Now be it, you know, up here in Montgomeryville. And I already knew the right way. And I'm sitting there suffering with depression, with overeating, whatever. And it's like, I know that this isn't right. And then during that time, I would stretch out my meetings because this one woman would give me a problem in the group, and I didn't want to go. So then I would stretch it out, and I think the longest I went without a meeting was like 10 days. So I'd go like these 10-day periods of not going to any AA, not any recovery at all, just laying around watching cable all day and eating. And I was suffering. And then I got my apartment in Telford, and which is not as 20 minutes, and so I have to go back up to Feet First, and I was so scared because, you know, I have social anxiety. And I got back up here, and I got my one of the girls that I knew from before that was coming around, and I asked her to sponsor me, and I'm very grateful for that because she really helped my recovery a lot. But just by doing step work alone, it really kind of cuts through all of this, you know, BS that you're going around with. And I've sponsored women since then, and not all of them stay sober. But then also I was taking on these cases of women that were relapsing too, because this one lady during quarantine, oh my God, she would call me crying every time, I'm losing my house. And it was like those kinds of problems. And I'm like, oh my God. Then it was quarantine, so she didn't want to get together because it was quarantine, and she's afraid of getting COVID. We're all going to die of COVID. And it's all these problems. And every time that I talked to her, she was having a literal fit. And I didn't realize she was drinking and then calling me and then crying. I didn't realize it. And I don't know. I had to let her go. But the COVID was weird. My mom got diagnosed with lung cancer, and before that I was like dating and stuff, and then my mom got sick, and I got into focus on her, and I was able to be a caregiver for my mom, and you know, drive her to treatment, clean her house, get the groceries, whatever, take care of my apartment, help her, and go to my work and go to AA, and it was like a very stressful time. And then there's a time it's like, well, we didn't know if she was going to live or, like, if she was going to get better or if she was going to die of it. And that was such a hard time because you didn't know. Like, it's like, I think I was trying to brace myself for her death, and I was trying to, like, get ready for it. And then my aunt was like, no, the doctor said she's doing great. I'm like, so you didn't know. So there was no way of, like, I couldn't get, you know, right. So she did die in 2020, and I was able to help her with hospice and everything. And, you know, I'm sober. We show up. We're supposed to be of service. I'm showing up for everybody. My brother would show up, like, one day a week. I was there, like, 7 days a week, and I was like, you know, he's on recovery. Like, we're trained to, like, be of service and stuff, and I'm glad that I could help her. And then when she did die, her sisters were there, and my one aunt is sober. She's got, like, 28 years or something like that. And so she helped me. You know, we sold the house and packed the house and got rid of all the furniture. And my aunt, my sober aunt, was the one that there with me who was, you know, packing up stuff, taking the stuff off the walls and, like, you know, whatever. I tried to sell stuff. It was stressful. And then I went back to my plus my mom had two cats. So I was able to take the cats. I wrote a letter to my landlord that I could have the cats. And then my one cat died in December. So I only have one cat now, but it's my mom's cat. But I still have it. But anyway, and like I said, we had the memorial a year after that with all her friends and stuff. And, you know, I can show up today, show up for my family. And let's see. Let me think for a minute. I was able to get my money together, and I work part-time, and it fits into my money, whatever. And I like my job. It's fun. It's kind of, like, fun. And it's, like, social, which I like. And so I like it. I stopped trying to be successful or what other people's idea of successful was. I think my aunt wanted our family, all the cousins, to be successful, white-collar people. And I'm not doing that, or I'm not able to do that. It used to really bother me, like, oh, I'm not good enough, I'm not doing a good enough job, or I'm not successful enough, whatever. And I was trying to, like, get her love or whatever, like I did with my mom, like, try to do a good job to get, like, a pat on the head, and it wouldn't work. And I stopped trying to get her approval, because I will never get it. Because, like, when you do step work, it's like, why is a person like that? My aunt grew up in an alcoholic home. Her dad was an alcoholic. We, like, throw stuff at the kitchen table or, you know, dining room table. So she was trying to get love from her alcoholic father, which she would never get. So then her power driver ways are her ways that she inflicts on all of us. And that's why she's like that. And if you look at, you know, if you kind of take it apart, you say, then I'm not angry. How can you be angry? That's how she was brought up. You know, she's 76 years old now. And it's like, she's not going to change. I have to stop trying to find approval from someone who I will never get it. So I stopped trying. And then I'm a lot happier, because it really did kind of bother me. During the quarantine, I did do a lot of Zoom meetings. And I still, there's an 8 o'clock every night that I go on every so often, and every week. And I like it. I was able to chair meetings and stuff, and you learn how to chair on Zoom and stuff, which is different. And, but I like it. The group really keeps it green for me, because there's this one kid who's living in his car, and this one kid is in a homeless shelter, and he's on the meeting in the homeless shelter, and you can hear the other people in the shelter. And, like, when you hear it, it's like, it keeps it very green for me. It's like, I could absolutely be like that. I think it's important to remember, like, you know, you could lose all of it. I mean, you know, what do I have? An apartment and job and a car. But I could lose all of that anyway, like, from alcoholism. Like, it's only, you know, I have to be working a program. I have to stay sober. I have to deal with the stuff as it happens and get rid of the resentments and fears, or I'll pick up a drink or a drug. And I think for me, I go to food, because it's an easier, you know, harmless thing. It harms me, but it doesn't harm anyone else, and it's just whatever. And but I'm glad that I had that outlet. Like, I don't smoke anymore. I quit smoking, and so I'll just allow myself to eat. Like, when my mom was sick, like, I'm just going to buy the cake and eat the cake. Like, I don't care right now. I'll pull it back together later. And, you know, this is my weight loss journey. It's a lifelong journey, I guess. I just have to keep going with it. And it's not even that important. Like, who cares? Like, I care, but I don't even really care. So it's not really a big deal. So I take time. I get up, I hit my knees, and ask God for a day of sobriety, because that's what they told me I had to do. And I hit my knees at night, and I thank God for a day of sobriety. And I've done that every day. I haven't gotten necessary to drink. And I have my coffee, and I'll read, like, a daily reflections type book. I have a Christian meditation book that I like. Joyce Meyer book and read that. And then I'll pray about if I have worries or financial problems or if I'm worried about someone else's recovery, I can pray for them in the morning. Or sometimes I just sit and plan out my day, like what do I want to do today or what are the things that I want to do, what are my goals or whatever. And just to take that time and sit in the morning and just kind of have that time with yourself and God and just kind of, get centered. And if I do that, I'm way more centered emotionally throughout the rest of the day. And if something happens, it's not going to throw me off emotionally. I still go to my meetings. Like I said, I do the Zoom ones too. And I'm in service. My Thursday meeting, I have the key for that. They gave me the key commitment. And I'm glad that I have it. And it's like, I don't know if I want the key. And I took the key. It's like, it's fine. You know, it gets me there every week. And I sponsor women, like I said, and give people rides. That was one of the things that I learned from Pete First. They're like, hey, this lady needs a ride. She's on the way to the meeting. I'm like, I'm like, fine. So I learned how to drive people in recovery. And this woman that I drove couldn't drive. So when I was, talking to her and stuff, it's like I could see how I was helping her. But I could see how I was being of service. And like even when I sponsor people, I can see how I'm helping them. And it does help it, and for me. Because when I'm trying to help someone else, it helps the Spirit of God go through it. And it helps me to stay sober and it keeps me in gratitude and stuff. And that's the way to stay sober. And I can't give up. I know how bad my drinking is, and I have no interest in going through that again. My bottom is in and out of treatment. And if I pick up, it's just a matter of time. It's going to be in and out of treatment, and I have no interest in that anymore. So the easier, softer way is to stay sober and deal with whatever is happening at the time. Deal with the emotions. Deal with the relationship. Deal with the job. Deal with it. In a sober way, talk to your sponsor, do a 10-step, pray and meditate, whatever, call somebody and talk about it, and we learn how to do all these tools, and I don't have to drink anymore. It's just not how I live my life anymore, and but I'm grateful I can show up for you guys, so that's what I wanted to share.